This week on Retronauts, why the flux is this game so horny? Everyone, welcome to Retronauts. This week we are covering Toonstruck, the star-studded 1996 FMV point-and-click adventure game that sees Christopher Lloyd trapped in a twisted cartoon world that aged really poorly. But before we get into that, who the heck is speaking right now? This is not one of the usual hosts of Retronauts. It is instead me, Jess O'Brien, aka Voidburger. You might know me from my previous gig at GiantBomb.com, where I was the video producer, and you may also recognize me from a smattering of Retronauts guest spots over the years. But enough about me. Who are my esteemed guests? Let's go in alphabetical order.
That's me. Hi, I'm Cohen Edenfield. I'm a game writer and a cultural archivist. Jesus, no. I was just trying that out for the first time. I don't know. I like video games. I made one of these one time, an adventure game that you really liked.
You're gonna drag me for the rest of my life about that. I'm sorry.
No, it's just really funny.
For context, it was a Homestuck game, and I had never played Homestuck, so I was like, "What the fuck is this?"
Fine. It's all good. Yeah, we all dance to the devil we know. Go ahead. Yeah, that's me. Skull Mandible on Twitter, if you care about such things in these days.
And I'm Casey Green. I'm a cartoonist and cartoon and enjoyer. I've never written a game, but I've played plenty.
That's a shame. You should get into game development. That'd be a
the only hobby I have is video games. And when I try to turn that into any kind of job-based thing,
don't monetize everything you love. It's not a good thing,
folks,
to do.
You heard it here first. Don't do that. No, I started drawing because of video games in general. Oh. Not in video games, cartoons in general. I'm sorry.
Well, this is a smashing of both of those things.
Yes, yes. Both of those at once. First heard about it, I said, let's go. Give it to me. And then you get this. And you get Toonstruck, and I'm like, stop it. Don't go. What's opposite of let's go? No.
Let's not go. So yeah, what's our experience with this game? I played it 6 whole years ago, and I don't remember how I found out about it at all. But I did not enjoy it, but I was fascinated by it. It's so weird.
Casey played it. We played it. Oh yeah, that's right. I guess we have a streaming channel on Twitch, Game Worms, that is sometimes used for games, but mostly for cartoons these days. But back when we were doing games, Casey played this, and I watched him go, which was sort of our format. It's not great.
I think I found it on Good Old Games, GOG.com. Remember, I was just looking around on GOG at old point and click adventure games and saw what I thought looked like Christopher Lloyd being electrocuted to death on a cover, and sure enough, it was. And it was, yeah.
What a fun thing to stumble into with no context.
I mean, there's always something, there's always little parts of the world that you miss that go by the cracks, the waysides, or whatever. You know, I have my little thing, the idiosyncrasies. Is that how you say that word?
Idiosyncrasies.
Sure. Yeah. I have my little things that I liked, but then, like, other things go, like, just fucking miss me. I didn't really have access. Well, I did have computer, but I didn't have access to, like, FMV computer games. And this one is not really for kids, really, even though it is as, you know, lame as a 90s Mad magazine. So it's like, who's really going to get owned by this?
It's the specific, not to hop too much into it, but it's that specific kind of shitty where it feels like it's targeted towards irreverent, like, kind of smart teenagers. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the ideal. But all the jokes are for extremely divorced LA writers in their 50s who have, like, a lot of access to grind.
Mm-hmm. And, like, what's funny is that, like, I feel like 1995 and 6, that was kind of, like, that was the year to make a game with that vibe, because you also got Harvester, I think, the year before, Phantasmagoria 2, A Puzzle of Flesh, which was also aimed at this, like, sort of edgy teen sort of crowd. And then you get Toonstruck, and, oh, man, 1996, what a mess.
And all those games made, like, a lot of money, right? Like, these were all, like, huge successes.
We'll get into that. So, for those of you listening who are unfamiliar with Toonstruck, I'm going to just, like, run down the premise really quick. Drew Blank, our protagonist, is played by real live actor Christopher Lloyd. He's a cartoonist who ended up kind of typecast with this cutesy character called Fluffy Bun Bun, who he absolutely hates. But he's stuck working on that show and he's miserable. And during an all-nighter, Drew gets sucked into his television set for no discernible reason and into a cartoon dimension. Whoa! But yeah, this is an isekai. Anyway, he meets his original character that he actually likes and vibes with. His name is Flux Wildly.
Yeah, they do not seem to fucking like each other in any of their conversations, though. It's like, Flux, old like, buddy, you piece of shit. I'm going to fucking tear you down every time we even briefly interact.
Yeah, they got this like
every
friendly
sentence with a cruel aside to no one.
They got this like friendly antagonism, like rascal behavior between the both of them. I consistently mispronounce his name as Flux Wildly and not Flux. But that guy's voiced by Homer Simpson himself, Dan Castellaneta. And this cartoon paradise he's found himself in is in trouble because a villain named Dr. Nefarious, voiced by Tim Curry, of course, is bent on using this weapon called the Malevolator to turn all the cute and zany characters into dark and twisted freaks. And what follows can only be described as hijinks. This is probably the game with the most hijinks ever. Lots of point-and-click puzzles that rely heavily on cartoon logic and puns. Do you remember any particular nightmare puzzles in this game?
I mean, the main thing is like remembering like Heart and Soul, Bells and Whistles, to find every opposite for the to make the cutinator.
Cutifier.
Yes.
Like all it gives you is like it says we have to find the opposite, and then it shows you what the Malevolator is made out of, and then you just have to have that like a brain dead animator cartoon knowledge that like as a kid you're just sitting here like what
the hell?
Because, you know,
like, so specifically there's a thing called the Malevolator and it's like, oh, it's turning cute things evil, we got to find something that's the opposite, it's made of these 13 shitty objects, we got to find the 13 opposite objects, but like they're not quite opposites, most of them are just like idioms.
Yeah, and they're all like, idioms.
Yeah. Yeah,
this is an untranslatable, unlocalizable game, I think.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because the demand has just got to be through the roof. But it's like, okay, there's a dagger, which if you know it's a dagger, is fine. I can't remember if they give you the names or if it's just
no, they don't. I don't think they do. I think you just have to like surmise it.
Yeah, you just have to look and then like just think cloak and dagger, you know? You just have to.
So you need a shoe. Get it? Yeah. Heart and soul.
Heart and soul of a
heart
shoe.
And soul.
Yeah.
Spit and polish. You know that phrase every child of the 90s is always using?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
So yeah, not only is it an idiom, but it's also a like a pun, I guess. You know? Mm-hmm. Like heart and soul. So you have to be like, well, how do I get a soul? How about a soul of a shoe? You know?
There's a
go
lot
down
of
that way.
Like weird wordplay, pun play, you know, elements to this game. And there's also just, you know, you're kind of not regular, but twisted and cartoony. Like your point and click puzzles where you're just kind of going through the key ring of your inventory being like, what the fuck is this for? What the fuck is this for? Yeah. There's like one where you have to combine a stuffed cat with cotton candy with something else to make basically a sex toy for a very pissed off squirrel so you can get past him somewhere.
Yeah, and you have to put jumping beans in it so it has like enough give. You know, it has
a vibration feature with the jumping beads, I assume. Yeah.
So
yeah,
the first, I'm looking at the instruction booklet now, and I was like watching a playthrough because like I needed to refresh myself. I remember the S&M barn and like the contrivance of the main puzzle, but I like nothing of the rest of this stuck with me. So I was like catching up, and it's like, wow, this first, it seems like you got to do a lot just to get out of the opening palace.
Yeah.
And so there is a walkthrough on how to do that. It is 8 pages of about a 25-page instruction booklet is a walkthrough for the first puzzle in the game, which they need because it's really rough. It's that kind of thing where you're just, there's no direction. There's no direction on what you might need to be doing at any given time. You are constantly trying to solve everything.
And also, there's the fact of the matter that, Flux and Christopher Lloyd have a comment about literally everything you can click on in this game. There will be a little snarky, antagonistic back and forth between these two characters. So it's like, even if you might have had an idea of what to do, you might get distracted along the way just because there's so much constant dialogue between these two.
Yeah, the dialogue is really... Every conversation is about 3 times long as it needs to be.
Yeah, the joke gets killed mercilessly. Yeah, just
there's this weird, the ice cube that's melting as you talk to somebody, which is supposed to represent that you're running out of the topics of a conversation, but I don't...
No, it's like you're breaking the ice, I thought.
Yeah, but
it's melting, so it doesn't make sense.
Well, let me just consult the instruction booklet I have here and see what it says. Let's see. Talking, playthrough.
Oh, it says, fuck you, kid.
Hints for the road. Yeah, Jesus Christ, you would think that... Oh, here we go. Click on the ice cube to break the ice with whomever you're currently conversing. This will initiate a general conversation with that character. When the ensuing conversation ends, the ice cube and hand icons will reappear at the bottom of the screen. Notice that the cube has melted some. Each time you click on the cube, it will melt some more. When it's melted to a pool of water, you have exhausted the general topics. See, what I loved about Sam and Max was that you would just, it would turn into a mouth and you would just talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm. No, we got to make this little weirder. This needs to stand out for some reason.
Like, maybe if the conversations weren't 8 minutes long, conversation, you wouldn't need a little stamina meter to be like, you're almost through it. You're almost done here in this accent.
Hang in there.
Got to get a bang for your buck back in the day.
By the way, the game ends on a heel turn, spoiler alert, where a former ally is revealed to also be a crazed evil jerk, Fluffy Bun Bun herself. Because she wants to zap the cartoon world with the opposite of the Malevolator, the cutifier that you made during the game. So it's like, you're evil too. There needs to be variety in cartoons, I guess, is the moral of the story. And then there's a UFO chase, and our protagonist zaps both of them, warps out into the real world again to get in trouble with his boss, and then be led straight into a sequel hook that would never, ever, ever pan out. And it's the same hook from the end of the 1993 Mario movie, basically, where it's just like, you're not going to believe this. And then the credits roll.
Mm-hmm. Something's got to be done about this game, Marty. It sucks. We've got to stop it from being made.
Oh, God, I wish.
I want to say, as a cartoonist myself and drawer, that Drew Blank is bad at his job. He's a lazy son of a bitch. He's asked by his boss at the beginning, one Ben Stein, to create very a more... bunnies, more Fluffy Bun Bun characters to hang with Fluffy Bun Bun, because as Ben Stein put it, in his business-like way, if one bunny does this well, then more bunnies will do better. Mm-hmm. Just that's the joke. That's the very boring business way of thinking it. And I guess he's in the afternoon when he has this, or early morning. It's 11 or something, mm-hmm. And then he takes all day and night. And comes up with nothing.
Nothing.
It is so easy to put something in.
Put a bow in its hair. Done.
Put a bow. Care Bear that shit. Make them all different colors of the rainbow. It is not that goddamn hard.
The intro of this is funny in a way that I don't think they intended it to be. Because, it's okay, if you're this is your job, why are you so bad at your job? He's pulling an all-nighter, it's 4 a.m. and he's staring at a blank sheet of paper. It's
wakes up, eyes bloodshot, a rude one.
Yeah, he obviously doesn't want to. He wants to make his he's really loving the Flux wildly. That's the Dan Castellaneta's character. He's Flux, one of these days we'll make your show,
and what is that show?
I don't know. Yeah,
you know what I mean? There's nothing to the character.
Yeah,
either.
It's just a little wacky. What's it?
It's if Bugs Bunny had like less definition as a character, wasn't likable, and
he's just purple and has sunglasses, and that is it for character design. That's
wacky.
I think something forward as hell.
this game is really working against really hard is, and this was something that happened a lot to me as a kid with the 90s, is like there was a lot of media like this that seemed to have a chip on its shoulder against like cute saccharine stuff. And it's like, I didn't live through the 80s, so I didn't watch any of those cartoons. Like, I never saw fucking Rainbow Bright and Care Bear. Mm-hmm. All I got was this like, we're not doing that anymore. Everything's irreverent. Take this. Yeah. And it's like, okay, it's like, if you're dropping this in 1998, like, it's like, you won, man. I've been watching only your brand of this kind of like, mm-hmm. Everybody's Chandler Bing. Everybody's got a sassy quip. The conversations in this are just like needlessly antagonistic from the jump every single time.
There's very few likable characters in this.
No. Like, why are you, why would anyone want to save this world?
It's better than working on more characters for Fluffy Bun Bun. So I guess he just does it because why not?
It's got to get
yeah. The whole aspect of this game is like the worst just runoff of classic 90s cartoons. Is just, it's like even more so because it's like they get to say the R word and hell and they get to cuss just a little bit more. You know,
yeah,
so, and like, cool.
And they're like, "Look, we're gonna show some deviant lifestyles, not like me." Mm-hmm. Good night, I'm safe.
They get to do overt gay jokes with the scarecrow and
well,
shit
we'll
like
get
that.
We'll get into that.
yeah,
it's as interesting as, like I said this earlier, but like a Mad Magazine.
Like the ads from the 90s. Mad Magazine.
Yeah,
like the ads for like the Rude Corn Nuts ads mm-hmm. in Mad mm-hmm. Magazine.
Yep.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, that's the caliber we're working with here.
Yeah.
But hey, history time. Time for history. According to Wikipedia, Toonstruck was conceived in 1993 as a game that was originally geared towards children, and then it was later rewritten to be more adult-oriented. And it wasn't until 1996 when it got released, because it turns out it takes quite a long time to draw all those dang cartoon characters.
Yep.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, don't make a 2D animated adventure game with a
and
retro
by the way,
90s vibe.
We're going to get more into this later, but around half of the entire game ended up on the cutting room floor to even get it out the door in 96, which is such a waste. And as a result, that's why the game ends like really abruptly on a cliffhanger. And it was implying that a sequel was coming, which never did. And presumably this cut content was going to go into the second game, even more than presumably, because developers have said, like, we were just going to take the stuff we had already done that was getting thrown away. We're going to repurpose it for a sequel, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, the ending was very slapdash.
It's like a refusal to commit. I think that's what really like brings this game down is like okay, here's the cute world where everybody's cute. Oh, but here's the Ray that's turning the cute characters mean. It's like, well, yeah, but all the fucking cute characters are also mean.
Yeah, they are.
Like, they're also goofy and wacky. So it's like,
they only hate them because of like their aesthetic and their cutesy voices. Like, that's really the only like, you know, discernible real quality difference between the Cutopians and the Zanydo people.
Okay, but like outside of the castle and that one rabbit screaming in a field, who even are like the cutesy characters?
I don't know. They're all drawn in a very similar style, so.
Yeah, that's really what's holding it back is like the design of the cutesy world just looks wacky. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like it's not like they actually nailed the aesthetic that they were probably, you know, railing against, which would probably be more of like the My Little Pony, Rainbow Bright, you know, 80s style. And they really did stick with like this like 90s Disney TV show / WB style.
Why is the first character you could talk to in Cutopia a foot? like an anthropomorphic foot guy, like a guy who's just a big foot.
Well, you know, like, I'm not the feet butler, I'm cute. The foot. No,
like, that's pretty wacky. That's like more of a wacky joke, right? Like, and that's like yet a third place.
God, it didn't occur to me that, like, of all the fetishes in this game, that we've got a giant talking foot in it as well.
Yeah, who gets tickled and tarred, tormented.
Anyway, this game was brought to us by Virgin Interactive Entertainment, makers of such classics as The Seventh Guest, The 11th Hour, the Aladdin game that everyone loves, and also like a lot of European versions of stuff like Earthworm Jim, Resident Evil, to name a few. And Virgin invested Mondo money into this game. We're talking $8 million in mid-90s money, which is Jesus. Like... Yeah, that's $15.5 million in today money. The game, however, only sold about 150,000 copies. Uh-oh.
That's not a lot.
What was its price at the time?
Full price.
Oh, right? I did not know. Like, I do not know. Probably 70, I had to guess.
Well,
I'm guessing.
No.
I'm guessing.
No, not 96. Like, computer games used to be like $40. Console games were like 50. Like, computer games could be like 30 or 40. Like,
I didn't start playing PC games until American McGee's Alice. So I have no idea.
All the computer games I played were free from cereal boxes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That too. There wasn't like there wasn't as much of a unified cost. And so they could kind of range around.
Interesting.
I don't know. Maybe they were trying to make it up. Maybe they really. Jesus.
Some other information. According to Joystick, there are 52 original characters in the game to interact with endlessly for too long, as well as 80 puzzles to solve and 120 objects to retrieve throughout the course of the game. That sounds like a little high to me, but I don't know. Maybe there is a lot of that.
Oh, I found it. It was an initial price of $60.
Yeah.
God, damn.
I was close.
You were close.
No, you were closer than me. I was fucking
close as hell. How much is that in modern money? $70 in 1996.
$60 and 96 was about a little less than twice as much. So it would be like, it would be like in the hundreds, like low hundreds.
You had to save up to play Toonstruck and stuff like that. Yeah. That sucks. And by the way, this was a 96, and it was definitely past the tail end of full motion video games and 2D games' popularity at that point, because everybody was getting super hyped up for the Nintendo 64's release that same year, and we were already 2 years deep into the life of the PlayStation 2. Everybody was pretty like, you know, this was old hat at the time. No one cares about FMV games anymore.
Wait, the PS2 or the PS1?
One, sorry. Did I say two?
Yeah. Yeah,
oops.
It's all good. However, they had the idea for this game in 94, you say?
93.
Oh, okay. 93 would be exactly 1 year after the movie Cool World came out.
That makes sense.
Cribbing heavily from conceptually.
There's definitely a graph of some kind where it's like Roger Rabbit is on one end, Cool World is on the other, and this game is in the middle and like forgotten.
3 points make a trend right into the turlet.
Oy.
Yeah, is Cool World worse than this? I suppose implied yes.
Yes, but infinitely more interesting to watch.
That's true.
Cool World or this? More interesting?
Cool World. This thing is like, Toonstruck is like, if you don't know and you're a weirdo like me who just likes that kind of shit, sure, it's fun to play once.
Interesting to play once. Don't say it's fun. Don't lie.
Yeah, fun is a strong word to use here.
I'll say it was fun.
Fair enough.
To play once.
Bold.
A second time, and I'm just like, ugh, how fast can I get through this?
Oh, that's right. I saw you playing it for the second time. That's yes. Right. You had already. That makes
I knew what
sense.
To do.
Yeah.
Oh.
For the
that's
most
why
part.
We got through it so quick. Okay. God. Good. Thank you.
I streamed it. And it was my first playthrough, and yeah, it was just like immediate brick wall. What do I do? I'm not great at point and click games. They're not my forte, despite me being like decently fascinated with late 90s FMV ones and how they are just such weird little freaks. I love Harvester. I love Puzzle of Flesh. And this is, I don't love it, but I'm just like, wow, it's another one of these freaks. What a strange chunk of the 90s. let's talk about the cast of this thing, because this is star-studded, this cast. The only two people playing humans, FMV humans, are Christopher Lloyd as the protagonist and Ben Stein as his crappy boss that we only see at the very start and the very end. Do we even see him at the end? We see him at the end once.
Yeah, he yells at him at the end, or he's just like, you're bad at your job.
This is in his credibility era, too. Like, this is when we would like bring Ben Stein in as like okay, we need somebody in this who like shorthand for respect and like probably good with money and like probably smart. Yeah. Like that's how we're, so let's get Ben Stein, who I don't.
Yeah. Ben Stein was just, he was playing to his
typecast.
He was happy doing that. You know?
Yeah. This was pre-intelligent design Ben Stein.
Yeah.
He needed the money so people could win it later.
Yeah. You'll never get anywhere, Jimmy.
Easy filming commitment for Ben Stein on this project. Some other recognizable, like, real deal capital C celebs in this are Tim Curry playing Count Nefarious. Needs no introduction. We know who Tim Curry is. Total icon. Loves playing campy bad guys. Just mwah, perfect in every way. We've also got David Ogden Steers. Best known for playing Major Winchester in MASH, but he was also the voice of Cogsworth from Beauty and the Beast, which I did not know. And Ratcliffe, the bad guy in Pocahontas, and Jumba in Lilo and Stitch. I did not know any of those three.
Yeah.
I just knew his name. I knew he was around. I did not like put together like, oh, he's Cogsworth and stuff. That's crazy.
Always you are forgetting Jumba.
And the last recognizable, like, Hollywood-ish celebrity is Dom DeLuise. He plays this octopus cashier, and I know him best from The Secret of NIMH, where he played Jeremy the Crow, and in American Tale, where he voiced Tiger the Cat. But he's also Pizza the Hut in Spaceballs, FYI.
and not to play through, KC, you're the fucking voice actor holocron. There's a bunch of them in here, right? Like a bunch of
course,
bunch of
the, yeah. I mean. Yeah. Tim Curry, David Ogden Steers, and Dom DeLuise were like, actors beforehand. But then you have like the fucking cast that you've heard forever, like
everywhere. Like, yeah,
Dan Castellaneta is Homer, Earthworm Jim.
Extremely prolific cartoon voice actors in this. Like, I'm not kidding. Yeah. Like, when I say
Tress
like
McNeil.
Half the people,
Frank Welker,
in this like list of the cast, the voice cast, half the people in this list have like 400 to 600 acting credits on IMDb. They've been in literally hundreds of shows that we all watched growing up in America, if you're American. But yeah, Dan Castellaneta, obviously. He also played the robot devil in Futurama. I forgot about that.
Yes.
And the genie from Aladdin in all of the spinoffs. Where it's like, they're not going to get Robin Williams. He's
well, they expensive. Got him back for the third one.
They got Robin back for the third one, but Dan did do it for the TV series and the second movie, Return of Jafar.
And Kingdom Hearts.
And all Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, yeah. He's Kingdom Hearts genie.
And you can really hear the Homer in his Kingdom Hearts genie really when he's like yelling at his genie over and out. I can't do either, but like, he's doing a good job. It's like, I was like, what? Like, I leapt off of the fucking diving board, like, no water in the tank. Like, what was I thinking? Sorry, go ahead.
What else we got? We got Jim Cummings. Mm-hmm. That's Tigger from Winnie the Pooh.
That's Pooh Bear from Winnie the Pooh.
That's Pooh Bear from Winnie the... That's is it Pooh Bear? Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
later Pooh Bear when he got a... When the older guy died, I believe. Or was that Tigger? I don't know. But he's also... I think the most iconic guard in Aladdin, Razul. You hear him a lot. And also like a zillion other things, because apparently he's
we've all got swords. That guy. The main
we've
guy.
We've all got swords.
Yeah, Robotnik guy. And the Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog. He's boxing the horny from OKKO.
Oh, man. Yeah, he is the only actor to appear in every animated series produced by Disney during the 90s.
Wow.
That's what his IMDb said. I'm like, whoa, okay, yeah. Bold claim. True? I don't know.
The penny just dropped for me on the fact that Christopher Lloyd was also in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So like bringing him back is like, it's an extremely derivative choice, actually. Yeah. And kind of a miscast for a guy who feels like he's supposed to be like a not 58, which is what Christopher Lloyd was when this game came out.
Good lord. He's been old forever.
He was born in 1938. Yeah,
he was old. He was old looking in Cuckoo's Nest, which is like the first, like the youngest I've ever seen Christopher Lloyd in that movie. He was a baby, and it's like that guy's an old baby, isn't he?
He was old in Back to the Future.
Yeah,
in the 80s, and then he still looked old in the 50s. That was the best. That was the best bit of that movie. It was
knock
the best
on wood. He's still with us. As this goes up,
he was in Nobody.
Oh my God.
Or Mr. Nobody or whatever. He was good in that. I know it sounds sordid, but you'll be rewarded when at last I am given my dues. And injustice deliciously square.
Oh, another fun fact about Jim Cummings that I did not know. He's the guy that replaced Jeremy Irons when he busted his voice and couldn't perform the song Be Prepared in The Lion King.
Mm-hmm. That is certainly the polite story that they put out about Jeremy Irons, that he busted his voice and not that he couldn't hit the, it's Be Prepared is a very important song to me, so I always found that to be a little bit like, well, just admit it, Jeremy. It's okay. Not everybody has to be a singing voice actor. That's okay.
Yeah. Aladdin had a different singing voice. Like that was common practice in the Disney days.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Singing voice, regular voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the first time I ever noticed that was in Nightmare Before Christmas, because Chris Sarandon being the speaking voice of Jack and Danny Elfman being the singing voice of Jack, which would plummet me into Oingo Boingo fandom for the rest of my goddamn life.
Just don't look at any of it up on YouTube. You just don't look at the live performances. It's great music. It's weird because like they eventually moved into what they do now, which is how they have the voice actor sing it, and then at the end they've had a pop star do a cover, and then they're able to have their cake and eat it too.
The pitch shift correction has advanced since the 90s, so now it's like, oh, we could like you make any old actor sing and then correct how they sound later. Other super, super recognizable people in this is Tress MacNeille, which you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. She's like almost every female character in this game.
Yeah, if it's not her, it's April Winchell, the other one.
She's like almost every female character in the 90s. Like,
that too, yeah.
She's literally doing a Babs Bunny as fucking Fluffy Bun Bun.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like she was in absolute shitloads of Disney shows, Nickelodeon shows, Cartoon Network shows, just like wow, everything. She does multiple voices on The Simpsons, Futurama, Animaniacs. It's probably like the most of the voices she's doing for this game are just Animaniacs voices that she was already doing at the time.
Is it Edna or Agnes Skinner?
Agnes.
Agnes, you can definitely hear the Agnes Skinner in the S&M cow.
She's also both of the guards up front of the house, the two armadillo guards.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
she's both of them. She's doing like her tiny boy voice and her old lady voice.
Oh yeah, that's one of the first early really bad puzzles, which is that you have to get the armadillos. They do a little dance when you meet them.
Yeah, you get them to keep dancing. And you steal the key.
They keep doing it until one of them drops a key that you can't even see that they're holding.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, I just got to get him to keep doing this dance that has been presented to me as something annoying that my main characters don't want to see again. So, because like every interaction is like undercut by a quip. So the signposting to the player is always like somewhat devalued by the need to keep writing a joke on a joke on a joke. It's like, fuck am I supposed to do?
Similar to the modern script writing crutch of constantly lampshading and quipping on things. This game.
There's a lack of confidence in the material in this that is made up for in volume, and I say that as somebody who has made that mistake in the past.
Couple other people. We got April Winchell, like you mentioned. She's the four female characters that Tress MacNeille did not do. She's also Clarabelle Cow in a Disney stuff. Did not know that.
Yeah, she's great. She was Peg in Goof Troop.
Oh yeah.
And and Wander Over Yonder. She's like the Sylvia, the horse that Wander. Mm-hmm. The blue horse thing. Yeah, she's great. No, like you can always tell. She's like she's got like that fucking soccer mom, I'll kick your ass kind of vibe.
Also we got Frank Welker. Which, like, I most associate him with that video of him in the 90s doing lion roars and snarls using a trash can for reverb.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he is behind one of the longest continual performances of a character ever, Fred from Scooby-Doo. He has been voicing Fred from Scooby-Doo since 1969.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Isn't he also Scooby, or is they get someone else who's Scoob now?
I think someone else is Scooby. Okay. And he's also voiced quite a few different Transformers. Am I right, Cohen?
I wouldn't know. I don't really know about like cartoons.
And of course, he's Dr. Claw, also from Inspector Gadget.
Yeah, he's Megatron, Galvatron, and Soundwave. He's three of the best voices.
No, I can count on you.
Soundwave is a little bit of a cheat, but he does a really good, because Soundwave has like a vocal thing they do to it, which was like a big fucking deal in the 80s. Autobots, you know, that kind of thing. But they put a little sass on it. It's nice. But sass. He's really good.
He's also the official new voice of Garfield.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
After Lorenzo Music passed, like Frank Welker just took it over. So any new Garfield thing is our boy Frank.
Wow. I did not know that. Yeah. We've also got Corey Burton, who has done a lot of video game voice acting. Finally, video games. God, I miss them. Fuck, come back. He's the voice of Dr. N'Jin in Crash Bandicoot. He was the original Zeus in the original God of War. I don't know if Zeus shows up in the remakes. I haven't played him.
He wouldn't. After what?
Oh yeah, maybe he died at the end of the. Wait a minute. Early God of War
games really dealt with the expanding cast problem. Very efficiently.
I figured that out.
Yeah.
Spoilers for the original God of War. He plays Hugo Strange in Batman Arkham City, and in Kingdom Hearts, he played Yen Sid.
Uh-huh.
Ansem, and
that's Disney backwards.
It is.
And Dale, the chipmunk.
Oh.
Interesting.
That's
range.
Also Disney backwards. You just gotta squint.
I know I've heard the name Corey Burton like forever, but like I can't really, like, I'm looking at his thing, I'm like, he's been in everything, goddamn, but I don't recognize him as much as like, you know, Tress or Jim Cummings or other stuff.
Yeah. It's like he's just as prolific as all these other people, but I guess like I don't know. Yeah.
I want to see what difference? Christopher Lloyd was doing around when this came out, because I was
definitely.
Okay, is this, so 1994. So while he's it must have been
filming in 94-ish probably.
I'm gonna say just because that's how long his shit. That was the year that Uncle Fest, Addams Family Values, comes out. So this is that sequel. So it's the sequel, which is that's as everyone knows, it's the first one is the one where Uncle Fester is like welcomed back into the family, but then an outside force is trying to use him to steal the Adams fortune. And then the sequel,
John Cusack.
That's in the sequel.
The same thing happens in the sequel.
It's the same plot.
What the fuck?
same thing, but it's Joan Cusack, it's David Jelinski. Anyway, and also Angels in the Outfield, where he's the angel from
the angel in the outfield.
That was one of the VHS tapes I had as a kid. So you know how that is, or it's like, I guess this is one of my movies I'll watch a lot.
Yeah, I guess I'll memorize this by accident.
Yeah, it's not a great film. No One Should Get Divorced, which is a lot of movies of the, and like Pagemaster in 94, like. Oh, yeah. This was a year for Christopher Lloyd, and then like 2 years later, fucking Toonstruck comes out. Fallen off since 94. It's like he's had a couple of years of like not as much work. And they're like, Drew, don't worry, it's about to turn around. Toonstruck is finally dropping.
Oh Jesus. Man!
So just take $90. Just set him down.
Last voice actor I want to mention is Jeff Bennett, who is the voice of Johnny Bravo and Kowalski the Penguin in Madagascar. And like everyone else here, he was in just absolute shitloads of kids shows in the 90s and aughts. And to this day, pretty much all these people are still like working a lot.
Yeah. You don't like that's the great thing about voice acting. But I bet the hard thing about voice acting, if you are trying to get into voice acting, I would imagine that sort of like academia, it's like, oh no, all the positions are already filled actually, but people have been doing it perfectly for 40 years.
There's no more voices left to do.
Whoops.
We've got them all covered. We'll be right back. So, how is this game aged, folks?
Oh, beautifully.
Very carefully.
Very uncarefully. I don't know. Like, it's we mentioned earlier, the Arsler shows up. There is a character that is a scarecrow who is just a extremely homophobic caricature called the Carecrow. Very mincing queer stereotype that talks about fashion and talks like this. And, oh, I wouldn't be caught dead in that. It's like, okay, great.
Also
great,
done great. By Jeff Bennett.
Yes, also Jeff Bennett. Oh, and his quest is that, oh, he hates these clothing. Oh, please get me a cape. I need a cape. And you have to get him a cape. And then he'll give you his cloak for cloak and dagger. And then he immediately gets malevolized. And
you can't even talk to him after that, right?
No, he just turns into like a spooky scarecrow, like a Halloween decoration, basically. Which, you know what? Almost kind of the game to imply that gay people, not evil, they're cute.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Wow.
I'll put
one on the fucking board for this game.
I'll stretch that one to its absolute limit of benefit of the doubt, sure.
It's rough, especially to watch those scenes, because Christopher Lloyd is playing them as if like Christopher Lloyd and Dan Castellaneta could not have been playing those scenes more differently. Like, Christopher Lloyd is like just talking to the scarecrow as if he's a person and he's not off put. And then like Dan Castellaneta has turned his head all the way around several times to do the get a load of this guy cam.
Yeah, right.
Like, just like,
well, Flux is the audience surrogate, obviously, and we, you know, gay people are so weird.
Yep.
It's such a collection, this game, of like crummy little LA writer trope problems. Mm. It's like everybody's got a hot secretary who thinks she's so smart with her books.
I mean, there's just jokes in the 90s. I mean,
yeah.
Animaniacs did half of this shit in its own way. They just hit it differently. They just hit it better, you know?
Yeah. Well,
they just didn't have to.
I mean, Animaniacs played it more on its face that it was like very LA, because it's like it literally takes place on like the Warner Brothers studio lot. So it's very, very Hollywood and like has all the celebrities and stuff like that. So I feel like it was a little more obviously like, since it's set there, like it's not like high. I don't know. I think Toonstruck is more just like, well, we're copying these things, but there's no reason for them to be this like LA.
Yeah, no, it's just a series of like I don't know what the tone they were going for was specifically.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of things that came out in 96 knew what tone they were going for.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's like
Harvester was recent.
Yeah, everything was there's a weird line to toe when you're trying to do something that is like on paper for kids but a little edgier, you know? Mm. And that can like, it's rarely done well. And I can't even give you an example of what was. Like, I have my favorites.
The movie Shrek? Like, I feel like that's about as close as we get. Like,
maybe. Yeah, like, that's kind of like all ages family stuff that's like, yeah, it has a little bit for everyone, but it does know that it's like, yes, family stuff, PG stuff. Yes, yes, yes. Mm. But like, there's still like a different push that always seems to happen. Like, look at Conker's Bad Fur Day, a game that I love, but has like similar fucking problems. Mm. Like, I will absolutely 100% admit that it does.
Yeah.
But like, I enjoyed the hell out of that game then and now.
I think a word you might be looking for is sophomoric.
Ooh.
Yeah, I guess so. That can be fun, but like, when you're trying to like toe the line of like, is this for kids or is this for adults? Mm-hmm. That can be a real tough line. I mean, Simpsons kind of did it, you know, early Simpsons. And then you saw people try to like mimic that, and it just like fucking, you have fucking fish police. You have capital critters, you know, too kiddie for adult, too adult for kids, you know?
Yeah. I think it often like kind of drifts into just like, it's for little stinker 14-year-old boys.
Yeah.
And it's like, nobody wants that as your main demographic, do you? They don't have money.
Yeah, they don't have money. They don't always aren't always watching TV.
And their parents don't want to buy them these things that are going to alter their personalities in negative ways. Like, Toonstruck will do that if you're 14.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Toonstruck would be an argument for, like, see how difficult life is when you live this way? See how nobody likes you when you talk to them like this? You see how empty and confusing it is when everything is a transaction? Mm. You see the Caratron represents the self that you are trying to build out of the
cutifier.
Yeah, the cutifier, whatever.
I do like the Caratron a bit better, actually.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a better writer than this person.
I think Cohen, I think you did hit on something though with Shrek being like kind of four kids, but you know, adults, the adults who are watching it can also get a kick out of some of the jokes.
And specifically,
I felt the same way about the new Puss in Boots, the Last Wish movie,
which I've heard is amazing.
It's a great movie. It's really good. It's like it is definitely a fun like romp, but with like moments of just like they aren't completely. They're not pulling a lot of punches when it comes to certain things. It is a cartoon. Like they talk about people dying in a cartoonish way, you know, and stuff like that. And it's like, they'll drop as silly as it is. They'll drop things like, what the hell are you doing? And stuff like that. Or this is crap or whatever. That's just like, well, it's still fun for everyone, you know?
Yeah. Mm.
Crap is the most like appropriate cuss word for 12-year-olds, you know.
It's the Bart Simpson list.
Yeah.
Hell damn ass crap.
Bart Simpson / Strong Bad.
But like
ass crap. Yeah.
But even around like late this type of 90s, they fucking just like said no, thank you. They said. They being like, I don't know, S&P standards and practices and offended moms who watch the TV were like, I don't want Ren or Stimpy saying crap, you know. I don't want to see the word hell in a cartoon, even though you're just talking about, you know, the place.
yeah
it's H-E double hockey sticks.
You
couldn't really,
I mean, that's why Animaniacs had Lydia Karaoke Network Censor. Like, that was a whole character, was the censor character. Wait, it wasn't Animaniacs, it was a Hysteria.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's something that's happening in this game, and it's the exact same thing that happened with Star Wars Episode One. And what it is it's somebody who formerly had constraints or limitations of some kind that they had to work with, and like all this kind of like snide snarkiness plays better in something like Tiny Toons, where they are kind of having to get it in around the edges of what they're allowed to do on something that's next to a fucking Captain Crunch commercial.
Yeah.
And this, it's just like, not only do we not have that, and not only do we not have the limitations of, oh, this whole thing has to happen in 11 minutes. The story has to be introduced, progress, and resolve in 11 minutes. Now it's like, oh, one conversation with a Shamrock who is both Irish and Scottish. Why, that can go on for 8 minutes without repeating. It just like read every single line. Like, this is what happens. It's like, if you don't have anything holding you back and you're like, finally I can really cut loose, it's like, oh, I have no editor.
Oh, everything gets in great.
Yeah.
I feel the power, it's growing by the minute, and pretty soon you're gonna see me wallow in it. Good, a special kind of honey. Flowers and trees, depressed and frankly boring.
Speaking of a censorship, the 90s was a weird time, I think, for instilling fetishes in children that would last into their adult lives. How many fetishes we got in Toonstruck? Why is this so horny? We've got hypnotism, including like master / slave terminology. We have milking. We got BDSM. There's vor. There's furry stuff. We make a sex doll for a squirrel. There's a lot of horny shit in this game.
Yeah, but nobody's fucking, cowards. Like, this is... Very PG. Yeah,
Christopher Lloyd in Flux. I was shipping it the whole time.
Get it. You twist it around for me, old buddy. Get it wet.
But Jesus.
Look, only one of those. Only that's why his like beautiful ancient drawing of Flux that he had done 10 years old had one drawing of him and then like a few sketches around the edges, because that's how far he can get before he starts jerking off.
I don't want to draw bunnies. I want to draw my little trash bag.
He does look like a trash bag. He kind of looks like a Pokemon.
He looks like nothing. He looks like the 1996 Olympics mascot.
Oh my God. Fuck.
Izzy. Yeah. Izzy.
Izzy.
Izzy. Yeah. Sucks.
Well, is he?
Yeah.
I mean, that again, another par for the course for cartoons of the 90s. Let's just have fun with being horny and in love.
Yeah, fetishes.
Well, calling it in love is a thin. Let's just have fun with being horny, you know?
Yeah.
You know what? I just watched like a couple nights ago after not seeing it for goddamn 20 years, Fern Gully. Lots of fetishes in that thing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's the one where Tim Curry says he comes in the song.
Yeah. Not in the movie, though, on the OST.
He says that makes sense.
He's horny. That's one of the lyrics.
In the original soundtrack?
Yeah, for Toxic Love.
Interesting. I never knew that.
You know, everyone look up Toxic Love from Fern Gully, and you tell me they weren't drawn all that with one hand.
Yeah, it's a filthy song. It's a very horny movie. I mean, a lot of this was, and a lot of it was just, I think a lot of it was that they were drawing it by hand. Like he is at the start, and it's like, God, I'm gonna have to draw this character 800,000 times. Well, okay.
Better make him hot.
Yep.
Make him hot. But like a lot of the Malevolator. Like what it does is it like turns things evil. So a lot of what it does is turn cute things into weird, horny, deviant, hot things. Like we mentioned that barn earlier there. I mean, the barn was already a sex joke, though.
That's like, what you have I mean this- about like the like the consistent, like the commitment to the tone. They can't help themselves. Like the cute, like Mm-mm. the cutie lands should be like this like neutered and like nothing, like nobody is like, but there's a bar where people are just like getting drunk and making out, and it's like, this is, hold on, like what, yeah. What, or it's like, oh, the like the octopus talks about like, oh, all the video games, the only ones they play are the stupid cute ones, but then like as he's talking you can see that like the cute characters are just playing like what just look like regular ass video games. There's not a cohesion stylistically between what's happening in the story and what you're.
It's all just aesthetics. Very shallow. Fucking just like, yeah, it's cute because it looks cute. It's evil because it looks evil. And they're also not lying about the things they're doing. Yeah, they're just being dominatrix now. Oh well, fucking, they like doing it.
Yeah, I guess they killed the other horse and made him into glue. That's like how you know they're really bad. But
yeah, the original barn. For those who don't know, you go to this barn, and Tress MacNeille is everybody, I think, in this barn. But there's a cow that has.
No, April's one of the. I think April's the.
April's the sheep.
Sheep. Yeah.
But this cow is like lamenting that this butter machine, this milking machine, is like out of commission, and it is like very clearly to this cow, this is like a sex toy to this cow.
I get my rocks off.
Yeah, like it's super overt that this is a sex thing to begin with, and then it gets zapped by the Malevolator, and now it's just like an S&M sex thing, but it's still a sex thing. So it's like, okay, this is a really like lateral move, but now there's like a lot more talk
now we're
about
just not lying.
Yeah,
we're not hiding it.
Now there's just more S&M jokes, but it's the same damn thing.
Yeah,
it's aesthetics.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just, if the whole thing is aesthetics, then like they should have just been like just like, it's like you meet the wolf in the woods, and it's like, okay, well, what are you? And do you live in the middle because you're intentionally like blurring the lines between like cute and wacky and evil? Or
yeah, no. Those are the three ideals of this whole area. There's
the dark triad.
Yeah, there's wacky, zany do, and then there's evil. And it's all aesthetics. I mean, the wacky stuff is like, okay, well, they're actual cartoons, but they're also kind of cute.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But also kind of mean. So it's they're kind of being evil too. Like everybody is hostile to you. Everybody is cute, and everybody is wacky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this you literally have to like be like, well, are there spikes on the building? because I guess that's malevolent, unless they're wacky.
Yeah, is
spikes.
It dark and awful? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What if they're colored spikes? Then it's zany.
Speaking of color, how about that? The phone where you have to dial the colors on the phone.
Oh, it's a quiz, right?
Yeah. You find a like piece of paper. It tells you, oh, dial this number. And it's just some colors. It's like seven, like orange. It's like, you know, little splotches of color. You find a phone that has the three primary colors, and you got to enter in the colors using, and like to mix the colors, you have to hold a button down and then release the mouse when it's over the other button you want to combine it with. And that, like, this isn't explained at all. This just takes like, you know, but the only way to enter it is to try to make the call, and there's no feedback that you're getting it right until you call the whole thing. And then if you finally do that, then you get a quiz where you're asked some random questions about like, well, what color is this, is the right side of this guy's jacket pauldron? And
yeah.
I guess what you do is you listen to this quiz, fail it once, write down all the questions, then go and look up all these things, come back and re-enter that tedious 7-digit color sequence at the start again, and then get to enter all of these. And all of this is to, like, win a better hammer so that you can hit the bell from before,
at the arcade
test of strength. But also you need to have gone to the wacky land and gotten into the gym and been made stronger. But of course he doesn't look physically stronger because it's just still live action Christopher Lloyd. So they have him pose while they make like stretching sounds.
There are so many just like 3-second clips of Christopher Lloyd like reacting to nothing in this that are just, they have a special place in my heart. One of them is like one of my Twitch alerts is Christopher Lloyd making one of these dumb faces from Toonstruck. It's just like, you know, you can see the mighty desire to be like comparable to Roger Rabbit. It's just, he's not as good at this as Bob Hoskins is. Like, let's be real.
He does not have as much to work with. I think he would have done just fine in something like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, as evidenced by the fact that he's in fucking Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He's in that movie. He does great.
I wish he was in Cool World.
He should have been in Cool World.
That would have been
damn it.
as what? I don't know, but I wish he was.
Oh, the scientist at the beginning who makes the thing.
He should have been the cartoonist. Like, just replace that idiot with Christopher Lloyd.
Is that Brad Pitt?
Oh, the guy who draws Hollywood.
It's Brad Pitt, right? Is he the artist?
Nope.
No. Brad Pitt's already there.
That's yet a different character.
Oh, God damn it.
He's killed in a motorcycle crash.
Yeah, the cartoonist was some freak who I can't even fucking remember the actor. And I don't care.
Killed his wife or something?
Something like
that. In the movie?
Cool World is a sister movie to me, to Monkey Bone, I just realized.
Oh my God, Monkey Bone's on that fucking list too.
Fuck.
Somewhere. Monkey Bone is closer to Cool World.
I'm
but
seeing
somehow
a little of the mask here,
no, I
too.
Think Monkey Bone's worse than Cool World.
I'm not saying it's the whole thing. I'm just saying I see threads. I see threads of the mask in this.
Yeah.
Mm.
Monkey Bone is
that's
worse
because Ben Stein shows up in both of them.
Monkey Bone is worse than Cool World, but I don't know. Like, Cool World is such a like on that line graph, it is like Cool World and Roger Rabbit have to be the opposites. And Monkey Bone somehow is like, yes, worse, but close to.
An offshoot. What is the, you know, we've been so negative. What's the best thing in this game?
I mean, like anything that is overwritten, there are some like just funny lines and funny jokes once in a while.
Yeah, there's nuggets that just didn't get sifted. Like you're having to just look through the dirt.
Like when you beat Dom DeLuise's octopus character, and he goes, "It looks like I won." He goes, "My mother's ass, you won, but I'll give you the prize anyway." But he just says it, and that's such like Brooklyn, like, "Yeah, my mother's ass, you did." But here you go.
There was a line that, you know, when I was looking for you guys' playthrough of this, because I knew you streamed it, but it's lost to time. There was a couple of tiny, tiny clips that survived on Twitch. And there was one that was actually like a funny line that someone said in the game. like Flux said something to there's like a dog and a cat that run the shop that has like all the different weapons, cartoon weapons.
Yeah, whack me. Get it?
Yeah, whack me, yeah. Flux says something sassy to one of these characters, and the character goes, "Now don't get smart, son. Never change who you are."
Yeah, that was pretty good. I heard that. I wrote that down, too. I heard that a little bit ago.
I think that's a good one.
That's okay. I think it's the only joke I wrote down. It was like,
it's like that one's an actual joke. You did it.
Yeah. Let me see. I'm going to look at my notes, see if there's anything. This seems, you're never just solving one puzzle. You're always trying to solve the whole world at once. Oh, positives? Sorry. I do have one thing that I want to point out. One thing. A lot of this game is backtracking, like any point and click adventure game of the era that wasn't made by Tim Schafer. I want to say, like, pretty far into this game, you get like a portable hole where you can like warp to between the centers of the three areas, like the center of town. But they make you go through yet another area to do it, so it's not really that fast to travel. But okay, so they change the music in every single background.
They do, don't
they?
Yeah.
They're not permanently looping, so everyone has like a long like startup to the song. So if you are moving from one area to the other, you just keep hearing the starts of these same five or six like public domain-y kind of. Like songs over and over and over again.
They got like, you know, the most iconic, most typical, most cliche, like this is what cartoon shit sounds like. Mm-hmm. All those like orchestral soundtracks from like, you know, that were reused in Ren and Stimpy, but were originally from like, you know, Bugs Bunny cartoons and things like that.
And like the sarcastic ones, the one where it's like, see, it's a joke that we're doing this. We're showing you as a cartoon. It's like, yeah, but it's like it's just over and over and over. Stuff I liked. I liked. I'm not doing a bit. I like the basic concept of the fact that there is a central thing that you're trying to build that you put together from all the like bullshit detritus you pick up as you play adventure games, like the fact, like a place for those things to go. I think if that had been executed well, that's a pretty neat little bit of business that encourages you to just like get out there and go for it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Something better than the X and Y, you know, fucking Pokemon X and Y opposites concept to illustrate what those things are supposed to be would have been way better. But like, I don't hate it as a concept. I don't hate like you are putting the solution together just through going through the actions of playing an adventure game, which normally feel like, yeah, they do feel very detached from your ultimate goal often.
Yeah. And like the concept of like, you know, it makes sense for this game to lampshade how you do get a lot of weird random bullshit in your pockets from adventure games and how just like bizarre adventure game logic is. Like, it does kind of like lend itself fairly well to this cartoon format. It's like, well, it's kind of like almost, I don't know, it's almost like a yes and to the concept of just ending up with a ton of like really weird stuff in your inventory by the end of it all. But like, pull it off. Great. Oh no.
Yeah,
no.
Some of the better point and click games also had a similar cartoon logic. Day of the Tentacle is all.
Oh, but Tim Schafer is a lot more funny though.
I mean, he's a lot more funny, and he knows how to make a game.
It's polished. Yeah. I mean, Day of the Tentacle is great. Maniac Mansion is kind of a pain in the ass to go back to.
I've never played that, but I've seen what you can and can do, and I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah, and it's like they moves away from that into, you know, making like the little things like in Day of the Tentacle, the fact that you can swap items between inventories by just dragging it to the icon of the time machine porta potty thing.
Yeah.
Like the fact that you don't have to physically go there and do that every time. Like just like little details like that, like little things that smooth an experience and that people have, if you try to do something almost right, there's kind of a hint that comes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Obviously feedback. It was very easy to get stuck in like Day of the Tentacle and stuff too, because it's all, no, I don't get the joke. I'm not a comedy writer. I can't yes and this. I'm 11. Like,
yeah, trying to play that game when you're young and don't understand it. You don't have the cynicism, or even this game if you're young, and you don't have the cynicism of being bored by and seeing too many cartoons and shit like this. You'll just be like, I don't, Cloak and what? What do I do with this thing? You know, what goes
here? I would be looking for a fork, knife and fork. Like that. That's the kind of thing I would have looked
for. Yeah. I mean, the same for like probably the Sam and Max game too. You know, just like I didn't have that push. Like I enjoyed it a lot, but I didn't have the fucking like head full of like too much cartoon bullshit yet. You know, I do now, but as a kid, I was like, I need to look up how the fuck to do this.
Sam and Max is a lot better because what it does is it will have somebody make one quick joke that is memorable. And later you will be like, somebody's like, and by the way, I'm the jar opening. It's like, well, aren't you proud of yourself? It's like, I should be. I'm the jar opening champion of this whole state. And then later you find a fucking jar you can't open. You're like, hey. Wait a minute, there was that guy.
Yeah.
Jar.
I remember coming across moments like that as a kid, but not still understanding that, like, I need to bring it to the jar opening champion. I know he said that, but to me, that's just like a throwaway gag.
Yeah.
You gotta like learn that I literally throw away. And yes, I like when I'm 11 or whatever playing this game, playing this or that game, I don't think about it as game stuff. You know, I don't have the verbiage of adventure game knowledge in my head to be like, oh,
yeah,
this and that, and this.
It's like Water Temple's actually pretty easy.
Something that's weird about Toonstruck, I feel, is like, I personally can't tell if it hates cartoons or loves cartoons, because there's elements of both.
That's the tone. That's the tone that's always hard to like tell with stuff like this and Conker's Bad Fur Day and other games that like are, you know, too kiddie for adults, too adults for kids. Do you like what you're doing here? Or are you like, obviously these people are professionals. Like, you
know, conversation like a boss in a performance review. Like,
do you like being here?
Do you enjoy working in this space? You don't have to.
Yeah.
You could do stuff. You don't have to make a sarcastic cartoon game if you hate cartoons.
I'm a therapist. Like, do you like doing this? Who hurt you?
It's weird because, like, the animations are clearly, like, so loving. Like, there's so many, like, you know, actual, like, incredible, like, squash and stretch going on. Like, clearly these were people that were incredibly talented animators and cartoonists. And then, like, at the same time, you have these writers that seem to have this, like, active disdain for a lot of, like, the trappings that come with, you know, animation and cartoons. It's like,
I mean, let me tell you, that's just, sometimes that can be one and the same with, you know, the job you love to do. But it still begs the question of like, are you okay? Like you get so sick of doing like the fucking you know, the cutesy bun fluffy bun stuff that you just want to have your character, you know, call the cow the R word or whatever. Call the old horse the R word. Be like, ah, he's in the blue. Yeah, the donkey.
This is bizarre. I'm like. Toonstruck was originally conceived as an interactive Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but in reverse, since a live-action character enters a fully animated cartoon world. You can just say cool world. Executive producer David Bishop conceptualized the game as a children's game where a villain was draining the color out of the world, turning it black and white. According to lead designer Richard Hare, Bishop's original concept was titled Trouble in Toonland and had its protagonist, a young boy named Daniel. Here's where things get really interesting. However, once Bishop's concept was passed on to co-writer and designer Jennifer McWilliams, it went through several revisions to make it more adult-oriented with comic violence and touches of parody and cynicism.
Touches.
No, and I'm looking up Jennifer McWilliams. This is like her only credit is Toonstruck. Like that is it. Like IMDb, known for Toonstruck credits, writer Toonstruck, additional
went into
crew,
hiding for her crimes.
Video game Toonstruck. Yeah. Jennifer McWilliams, where are you? Like,
are you okay?
Yeah, like account for yourself.
Answer for your crimes.
Or just explain. Like I'm curious. I'm curious like how something like this happens.
Do you think Christopher Lloyd remembers any of this?
I hope not.
I think Christopher Lloyd is like Nick Cage. He's like getting something from everything, even if he's not like remembering every detail of everything that he does.
I completely agree that Lloyd is probably, you know, he's one of those actors who gives 100 no matter what. No matter if he's in this, Back to the Future, Food Fight.
Oh, Food Fight.
Tim Curry's the same type of guy, you know. Yeah. God bless him. But he, yeah, like you said it earlier, the Cohen or Jess, I forget, is like he didn't have a lot to work with. You know, he did what he could. Didn't have a lot to work with, as he was just on green screen. Probably not even with like a I start to wonder if they were like him and Dan Castellaneta as Flux were even like talking to one another,
ever
like
in the same room.
Yeah, or something.
Probably
like
not, because it's like Flux was probably in the booth, and like Dan's on a. Or
I mean, he had like Chris had to record a lot of fucking lines too.
Yeah, but he would have been recording them in a green screen set. I just remember while we were talking.
He would have recorded some of it in a VO booth because of all the dialogue voiceover stuff.
Oh yeah, what am I thinking?
But like for that FMV stuff, he would have just been on green screen going wah.
I worked on an FMV game very briefly for like a summer. It did not end up coming out, which is what happens to 99% of video games. But it's a huge pain in the ass to shoot FMV. Yeah, it's. You're getting like it's all of the again to bring it back to episode one. It's all of the like the 2000 Star Wars problems of like the person has nothing to react to. They get like not even like even less sense of themselves in physical space than they do when they do like CGI. And they're like, okay, well here will be this is where the this will be and this is that. And like,
oh, yeah, I remember Ian McKellen lamenting like having to talk to tennis balls for all of The Hobbit after like being, you know, working with real actors on the original trilogy of Lord of the Rings and like having a bit of a emotional breakdown over that.
I mean, they gave Bob Hoskins just like a weird Roger Rabbit doll to talk to.
But also the guy who voiced Roger Rabbit was just off screen in a Roger Rabbit outfit doing voice at him too. So... which is funny.
Although, I remember Bob Hoskins saying like he started to think he could see Roger all the time after he like finished making that movie. Like he got like a little like stir crazy.
Oh god!
Like you're on a VR helmet too long and you just start to like you start to fall as you're sitting there.
People on like the same lot, you know, because like when you share the same lot, you use the same cafeteria or something like that. They would see, I'm forgetting the name of the guy who voiced Roger Rabbit. They would see him around in the cafeteria, dressed like an insane maniac, man, looking like shit. They would all be like, "Man, it looks like that Roger Rabbit movie is like not going to be good."
That's what they think it's going to look like. They're like, "Oh my god,
Jesus, what are they doing over there?" Someone told me on Twitter, you know, because I brought up Toonstruck because Bob Mackie told me that if I did not bring up that Christopher Lloyd also played Sebastian Jackal in the 90s UPM series Deadly Games, I would get demoted back down to guest from guest host. So there.
Games.
But folks, we got to watch this.
Oh, look, everybody has their Christopher Lloyd pull. Mine was Angels in the Outfield. It seems like we got what was that again? What was that? What were we talking about?
Deadly Games.
Deadly Games. Casey, what's your weird Christopher Lloyd pull? Like, what's your thing you saw him in?
Toonstruck.
Yeah, I guess that. Yeah, no, we're in your house, I suppose.
But Deadly Games, he, you know, you talked earlier about how he's a guy that gets 110% and doesn't phone it in. He phoned it in a little bit for Deadly Games, just a little. He could have been campier, but he's playing like the bad guy who is, he's from a video game and he gets isekai'd into the real world the opposite way around. And the game devs of the game he's in need to defeat him. And we need to watch it. I found it. We're watching this at some
1995.
Point.
1995. So he was shooting this. Halfway through him being on this, Toonstruck came out. Like, I keep thinking of it in terms of like his personal 9/11. Like, Just like,
where was Christopher Lloyd on 9/11?
Just try. It was like zoom in on the Ground Zero wreckage, and it's
Mr.
like
Lloyd, get back here.
Who opening meeting?
Marty, we gotta go back.
They had it blocked in to play it. He had to, it was the only way.
Anyway, we should watch this. But I posted like a screenshot on Twitter of Christopher Lloyd and being in this, and I mentioned Toonstruck. And someone on Twitter, at Eric the Graybo, told me that they brought a boxed copy of Toonstruck to Wizard World like a decade ago for Christopher Lloyd to sign. And his handlers said nobody brought that to the table ever before. And Lloyd looked at it completely puzzled and was like, I've never seen this before.
Did he know it was a video game?
And the guy was like, well, you're in it. You're on the box art.
I hope it was the one where he's being electrocuted, too.
Like, yes,
Why
which
I...
makes me...
Oh, no. Like, he's scared suddenly.
Oh, God. What am I
done? No. No. Ghost of Christmas yet to come. There's a life maybe. Right.
Which makes me wonder if, like, you know, don't do this, don't abuse this man, but like, is it possible to just like doctor up a box art of Christopher Lloyd in something he has not been in, give it to him, and he'll sign it anyway?
Probably. I mean, especially like the 90s, he was
increasingly violent looking things happening to Christopher
his
Lloyd.
His handlers.
Yeah, you gotta have, well, so that people don't come up to Christopher Lloyd with a
break his
box
hands.
Art where he
put him in a cage after he's done signing things, and that's how they handle him. Back in the cage,
this
was, Chris.
You know, this is something racist or awful, or you know,
wheel his ass back into like fucking.
Oh shit! There's a physical copy. Okay. Also, I wonder if they walk. Oh my god! You could get a physical copy of Toonstruck. It's on eBay. $4.90.
$10.
No bids. Less than $5. It has
$5.
Like, the box. It has the box art. It has the instruction manual. It has
about the same price as getting it on GOG. I think.
Yeah, just get it on fucking Steam.
I'm not gonna fucking play it. Are you out of your mind?
I want to display this and have people ask me like, Christopher Lloyd was in a video game.
I'm gonna nail it to a tree.
Yeah, with oh my god, the back of the CD case is the S&M sheep when she's got the cone boobs.
Hell yeah,
which is like
they were proud of that.
That's what, like, 10 years after Madonna did that, they're doing the joke in this.
Yeah.
You still remembered it.
Iconic.
I only know of it because it was referenced in everything. I didn't actually
exactly.
See it. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
you still remember it.
Yeah, I walked right into that.
I mean, like, you know, that's why we still have, like, the voice of all bad guys sound like this. It's like, who knows who that guy is modern day? I forget who that guy's name is.
Peter Lorre.
That voice showed up in the fucking Mario Brothers movie, and it's like children will never know its connection to Peter Lorre at this point. Okay. It has been like processed by culture so many. It's a 100-year-old reference at this point, practically.
Okay, I talked to Branson about this. I think that like
they're talking about Branson Reese, the also a comic book artist, comic strip artist. Follow him at Branson Reese. He's funny.
My boy, Rude Tales of Magic.
Rude Tales of Magic.
There are these voices that have been passed on, like that have been passed on specifically. It's like, for me, it's like Peter Lorre is like Digitamamon from Digimon. He's like Nightmare Syndromer, you know, and so it's that like slight variation, but you know, or it's the genie saying, it's not the pretty picture. I don't like doing it. You know, that but these have become these stock characters, like used to show up in Shakespeare and stuff. Like it's like, the classic character of, you know, the cuckold night watchman.
Yeah, you don't have to know who Peter Lorre is to enjoy that voice.
Yeah. And you've seen him in all those things, so it's conveying, it's like, oh yeah, it's the creepy egg, or it's the zombie genie, or it's all these different things. Like Edwin is now like for a million kids. That's
Edwin,
That's King Candy. That's who they think of is like,
choose goose.
Yeah, but like not to the next generation, who it's King Candy from Wreck-It Ralph. You know, it's all been passed down. I love that shit.
Hey, at least Alan Tudyk actually did a voice acting in that role. It wasn't just being himself.
God bless his ass. Alan Tudyk, like pass it down to Alan. Yeah,
it's a good Edwin. I wish, like, you know, celebrities are always just cast in stuff and they don't even do a friggin' voice or anything. Like, get the celebs that give a shit enough to do a voice like that. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, is like, I fully believe he's a part of that same group of people who will always give 100%.
And like, that's something that Billy West has complained about, is that specifically, like, there was a practice at certain big animation studios, one or two or three of the most popular, especially in the 2000s, would bring in like him or other like really good voice actors, get their audition, like hear all the stuff that they bring to it, and then give that to the, not give them the job, and then, but then give the audition to the celebrity. Be like, yeah, do some of this stuff, like all the stuff that the voice actor had come up with to try to get the role. Like, here's what I can bring.
Good luck. Good luck imitating Billy West, though.
Yeah. But like, maybe you can put a little affect on your, say, Finding Nemo's dad or whatever.
Mm. Marlin. His name is Marlin.
Yeah. His name is Mud in my book.
His name was Finding, right? It was called, it was like Banjo Kazooie. Finding and Nemo.
Yeah, getting back into it, Cohen, you said you found something.
Yeah, I found an article on Retro Gamer from about 2017 that is a conversation with Jennifer, with the one of the writers, and I would not say this is particularly this is not hardball journalism. It's like, wow, what a weird thing that happened. Here's what we were going for, but it's really a lot of like talking about like, yeah, there was actually a ton of money from the executives at Virgin, and like really a lot of push to like handle it like almost like a movie. And it's like, there's just really, really no conversation in any of this about the design, about like thinking about this as a
game.
It really feels like the design was, the fact that they were designing a game was secondary to the spectacle that they wanted. And the fact that it's like, oh, this is something you're actually gonna have to play, like
and enjoy, allegedly.
One of the things they point out is something that I had a lot of, that I really didn't like when I saw it, which is that time is passing as you're playing, because it's like, oh, well, as you solve certain things, it'll say meanwhile, and it'll cut away, and other, you know, things will happen, but they're not related to anything you're doing.
Right. Yeah. Like, you'll just walk to another screen and you'll get a meanwhile cutscene, and like Tim Curry's character is, you know, doing something nefarious.
I always thought that, I always took that to mean like I was going in the right direction.
It should convey that, but it might not. Like, because what it's really keyed to is like something you might have, because I think they are both like, you do a thing and also you pass a certain area, which is frustrating, because it's the problem. It's the thing that happened in Myst 4, why the last world of Myst 4 is the worst, because so much of the progression in the last world of Myst 4 is contingent on, oh, well, you walked to the, into this one room, and then you passed through this other area. Like, like, it's like, oh, well, you tried to go look for this person there, but you didn't find them, and then you came back here. It's like, well, no, that's what you as the game designer think is happening, because you already have the script in your head for how it's supposed to go.
Right.
So you, in your head, you already know that, well, they're looking for this person, and they're trying to look for them there, but they don't find them, so frustrated they return. It's like, that's not at all something you can be confident that a player has in mind as they're going. It's like, you are writing you're presently writing a story for to describe those actions, but that's not, it's like, oh, they might have just wandered in that direction, they might have been looking for
something. Yeah, you don't know me.
Yeah, exactly. They might have saved the game and then then put it away for 3 weeks, come back completely forgotten that was the last thing that happened.
Yeah, from the perspective of the player, when these cutscenes happen, they could just be utterly confusing, because you don't know what you did to trigger them or if it means anything. Yeah,
exactly. It gives you, ends up being a false positive. It feels like it should be commentary on what's happening. But it's not really. There's a note that, oh, every time you progress the story at all, everybody in the world has something new to say to comment on it, which that's not true. I don't think that's correct. But also, that's just confusing. Like, that makes you think that characters are going to have new
something
things
relevant to say.
Yeah.
instead of just more jokes that should have hit the cutting room floor.
Especially if you've only partially solved a puzzle. It's like, oh shit, well, is the lady at the costume shop the key to impressing this guy at the gym? Maybe I have to get a leotard.
Yeah, very few characters actually give you any clues that I remember.
Yeah.
Is it just me?
No, it works. It's a thing where it's like, oh, they always make sense in retrospect.
Yeah.
Because it's written where they provide a joke setup, and then it's up to you to find the prop somewhere in reality that can serve as a punchline. But the jokes aren't that good, so.
So good luck.
And they're all over the place tonally. Most of the times, the solution is to hurt someone, like whoever you're like in getting.
Yeah, just like real cartoons,
yeah. Yeah, but like
they keep coming back to like cartoons are violent. That's funny, right? And it's like, well, they can be other things. I don't know.
Yeah. Also, like not the cartoons that you're like lampooning here specifically. Yeah.
Especially the cute ones. Oh,
yeah.
Stop. Figure it out. Anyway, I want to talk about the legacy of this game, if it has a legacy. You know, despite us, shitting all over it, this game is not without its fans who are apparently they're still clamoring for that 30 years late sequel. In fact, while I was researching for this pod, I stumbled upon Toonstruck2.com.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
It's real. And it's kind of slick. It's a kind of surprisingly slick looking website. I did a little digging. It seems like the author of this website is a British graphic designer who I'm not going to dox, you know. Find your joy in this, I guess.
They seem to have enough time to mess around.
Yeah. So it's a fan site. It is not affiliated with the rights holders of the game.
Wow.
But it seems very enthusiastic on the promises of remastering the original game and developing Toonstruck 2, even going so far as to say they expect to release a playable demo of Toonstruck 2 in the year of our Lord 2023 some fucking how.
All right.
That's pretty big words from someone who does not own the intellectual property to do that.
Do you think they would really care?
Yeah.
Do you think Virgin Interactive would give a shit?
That's the thing. Like, I don't know exactly, but I do know he does not own it. So it seems like a weird thing to promise. You know, pretty big words that remind me of the promises of like, you know, AI art bros. And that might be because the site does say that they would do all of this with AI upscaling, and they've included quite a few examples of that. And of course, they do not look great.
What's wrong with them?
The life vanishes from Christopher Lloyd's eyes when you AI upscale Christopher Lloyd in this game. Like, his eyes become these dark pits of nothingness.
I was like, I gotta look at this now too. Toonstruck 2.
It's actually quite an impressive website. But yeah, there's like a comparison. Ooh. There's like a gallery of comparisons that you can kind of like smooth the little divider back and forth and compare and contrast and see how many pores the AI has imagined on Christopher Lloyd's face.
Whoa. Gross.
These don't really. Everything's so smooth.
They're worse. Yeah, ugly.
They're
like, part of the aesthetic of like this style of cartooning is that it has like its kind of like human imperfections that give it some charm, and like when you run it through an AI upscaler, it kind of smooths out things in a disconcerting, artificial, icky looking way.
This is like when they re-released like Sandman and they replaced all the cool skies and stuff with just shitty gradients and just like fill it. And they're like, oh, this had too much personality and looked like it might have been a physical object at some point. I'm gonna fix that.
Yeah, put a stop to that.
Casey, why do things look kind of jagged? Like what is it that's happening when things look really
probably
jagged?
Just the compression and the weird digital compression of the early 90s. As I was watching like a bit of a long play, I was like, it is very kind of rough to look at, especially like the blurriness of the live action segments. But you can also tell that there is some kind of like early kind of digital painting happening that is just like not quite there yet. There's some early animated sitcoms tried to do like digital painting stuff, like the Simpsons, famously the Radioactive Man movie episode was like the first time they did digital painting, and it looks so jarring compared to like episodes before and after it, before they kind of figured it out. And that's just like, you know, trial and error. And around 96, 95, when this was made, when this came out, you know, it was probably, it was probably about the same kind of like level of, I guess we'll try. And it might just not look very great at first, but let's, you know, it's what we got. It's what we can do. And there's charm in trying. There's charm in trying.
I will say one positive aspect I think of this in this game is that I think the backgrounds look great.
Yeah.
Like
it's well done. Got these, it's cartoonish.
Yeah. Wild ass, super colorful, really like wonky and fun backgrounds. It's like, yeah, they got that right. Cool.
Yeah. They're like, yeah. They're very colorful. You know where you're going half the time. You know, it reminds me of Day of the Tentacle and stuff like that. They had a similar like cartoonish aspect they wanted to keep.
That's absolutely. John Piampiano, apparently, was the artist who was brought on to do the background paintings, but ended up working on a whole host of tasks, including character development, storyboarding, character and background color styling, 2D effects animation, logo design, gaming icon design, marketing promos, and more. Sounds like they got a lot of work out of you, John. I hope they treated you okay.
John.
Yeah.
I think you were the person who was doing the best on this. I do like the backgrounds, like individually on their own. Each of them looks like a cool place to click around and explore. It's really only once you see them in motion and like hear the jokes
and see Christopher Lloyd's pixely ass all over it. You know,
I love when they don't. I love when they do a gif of him, when they like Tom goes to the mayor, they just have about like a 4-frame thing of him instead of like showing him reaching down to pick something over. They just like, boop, 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 boop. Well, nobody will notice it.
Yeah.
That's the best part. That is the best part.
They should have just Tom goes to the mayor, the whole thing instead of FMV. That would have been more interesting.
Mm. It would have been. Yeah. That would have been like, oh yeah, like he's turning into a cartoon. So now he's all,
you know,
like,
there's some parts of this game where he turns a little bit into a cartoon. It's very disturbing.
Oh yeah.
That's how it ends.
And it's, yeah, it's how it ends. And speaking about the ending, there's some info on this, this site run by a madman that has the intended plot of the second game, because you know, people have been talking to the designers and stuff like that over the years. And according to Richard Hare, the lead designer, once Drew escaped from Nefarious's castle, he and Flux were supposed to ride a train of thought, because there was a train track in Xanadu that you really didn't do much on that screen. It was kind of out of place. Mm. And you ride that train of thought up to an island in the sky. And here, Drew explores his own fears and fantasies within a carnival setting. There was a Wild West shootout, an encounter with Drew's artist idol Van Gogh, and a visit to a maniacal dentist. And just like exploring your own fear in a carnival setting just gives me sanitarium vibes. That's another weird point and click game from around this time. Bad game, cool game, but kind of, I don't know.
Bad,
a lot
cool.
of mental health things, bad, cool. But finally, Drew would need to kickstart his imagination / creativity, represented by a huge lighthouse. There's always a man. There's always a lighthouse. and defeat both Fluffy Bun Bun and Dr. Nefarious in the process. And if the first Toonstruck had been commercially successful, we would have used most of the content that had been cut from the first game and added in additional scenes to pad out the story. Drew Blank would have been transformed into a toon at the outset of the game and would need to undo this by the end of the game. So technically, they could still make the sequel, even though Christopher Lloyd is old as hell. He doesn't have to physically appear in this thing.
Yeah, you still do fucking some voice acting.
Yeah, we also wanted to add in more physical-based puzzles, allowing Drew to physically push around objects in the scene and use them together
to solve that's different way puzzles. Harder.
Yeah, that's hard. and as recently as last year, more lost media from the sequel has popped up with one of the animators, Laura Yanchevsky, posting her work files that she found from Toonstruck 2 on her YouTube channel. And if you're interested to see that, her channel is at LauraJ7185. And it's good stuff. It's like nice animation reel sort of stuff. She explains the context of like what this would have been used for, how this puzzle would have worked if it got made, if it got put into the game. So it's a good, interesting stuff. Didn't expect 30 years later
I noticed
this person even had these files.
Yeah, I noticed they what's the word, they referenced the idea of Van Gogh and his and the dentist part in the game, in like the early part of the game where he gets a call from the dentist saying he missed that, and there's a picture of Van Gogh in the background. of his thing, but still,
in the physical set that he was physically on at the very start.
It's interesting to be like, okay, well, there was some thought here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
who knew?
Oh yeah, no, like all the hallmarks of like cool ideas is like this is a thing that is like
dime a dozen
lethal with cool ideas. Yeah, it's like, oh, that wouldn't that have been neat? It's like, yeah, but that also would have been very hard. Like,
I feel like that's one of the things that fascinates me about these types of FMV games from this like precise like four or five year like chunk of the 90s is that they did have all these like really lofty ambitions, and it's like, oh, but making games is hard. Did you not know that? This is like really hard. And also there's no market for it anymore because it's 1996 and everybody's like so fed up with FMV games now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what a shame, you know, all this work. And like the idea that like that all these animators made so much stuff for the second game and it all got cut, never got seen. Like that breaks my heart. That sucks.
Yeah, well, it's not uncommon.
I know.
Because it's like that's the first thing that you can make is concept art and backgrounds. And let me tell you, it's like I know that they're presenting it as like, look, all these backgrounds are already done. It's like as hard as it is to paint those backgrounds, like painting the 2D, like getting the 2D backgrounds painted for an adventure game is like 2% of the work. It's like there is so much like just like it's a flex to me that the first thing this character that he does is walk down some stairs, because it is goddamn hard to show like to do that. Just like having a character in a 2D perspective like that walk down some stairs and have it not look like shit for reasons unclear. That's like it's like the first thing you can do. And it plays that like piano crash when that happens. You know what I mean? Like somebody's like running their fingers down the keys, like it's because it's a goofy staircase, so it makes that sound. It's like, but isn't this the cute land? Why does it make a wacky sound in the cute? It's fine. It's a fucking confusing game. yeah, this is hard. Uh-huh. But it's like, yeah, they've got nothing. I'm looking what I've got here. It's like, yeah, here's what we wanted to do. This,
you mean Toonstruck 2 guy?
Yeah, I mean Toonstruck 2 guy for sure. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's like, oh, isn't this impressive? It's like not a ton, you know.
No.
AI upscaling a still image is not really that hard to do. And like everything else is like, you have to program the whole game, you know, like that's really hard. Do you know how to do that? You're a graphic designer, I think.
It's hard. It's hard to make videos.
It's hard. Good luck to that guy, though.
I guess.
There's like a couple of adorable petitions that have not made enough signatures for interest for Toonstruck 2. And it's like, oh,
really?
Honey, they're not gonna make a game for like only 3,000 signatures. I'm sorry, it's not gonna happen. Very little demand for Toonstruck 2, but a powerful and passionate little niche on a weird little corner of the internet that I've stumbled into there. Good luck to them.
curse to them, I say. I curse them. I want to negate your luck. I want this to have no positive net outcome. Net zero for those folks.
Well, yeah, that's Toonstruck. What a weird thing. Any final thoughts?
As much as I've been critical and all that stuff, I am happy that this game exists. Like,
yeah,
as weird and odd as you don't know how to categorize something like this, too adult for kids, too kiddy for adult, I love that they tried.
Yeah,
I love that they tried and did this, and like it very easy to play nowadays. It's pretty cheap on like GOG or Steam or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you don't get this that often. This kind of thing that often anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's a weird little guy, and like
it's good to appreciate that kind of shit once in a while.
Yeah, like it's, you know, even though I would not say I like it, I am, like I said, fascinated by it. It's very, very strange. It's a strange little thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it being in like that neither here nor there kiddie versus adult area, you know, that didn't work out for it sales wise. That made it difficult to sell, difficult to market. There was basically no marketing budget because Virgin spent so much money just making the game. They had like nothing left for marketing. It's like nobody even knew this thing came out practically. So that's why it sold not a lot of copies. 150K.
Boy, I wonder what that's like. Have a marketing budget. That's all I'm going to say.
Important. Yeah. Yep. No one will play it if they don't know what it is, where it is, where you get it.
Yeah. Like, especially if this is a box, you look at it, it's like, who's it for? Like, there's Christopher Lloyd getting electrocuted. There's a clown in the background who I don't remember actually. Does he ever actually show up in the game?
He shows up near the end in Nefarious's hideout, and he's in
for being a mascot
room. Like,
yeah, for being a mascot, he's not that big a part of, he's not that big of a game.
He's the guy that briefly turns Christopher Lloyd into a toon, though, if I'm not mistaken. That happens in the room with that guy. So maybe. I'm wondering if like he had a bigger role that got like scooted down or something, like would have had a bigger role in Toonstruck 2 or something, because like he's the impetus for him having this cartoon ability-ish that happens twice near the end. I don't know.
It's like he's their Cheshire Cat, but it's that they made that classic mistake of like, well, we don't want to introduce our cool character too early and use him up. But it's like, if you do that too much, it's like nobody knows who the hell the character is by the time they show up.
They barely did it at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had one character at all.
Yeah, he is... This is literally like the instruction booklet. It says Act 2 characters, and it's just a picture of the clown. It's just that's it. And then he's not just, even in the list of characters.
He's just a fun character. He's the most subtle, not subtle, but more succinct, simple way of telling you, the viewer, that this is a cartoon, but not for kids.
It's twisted.
He's on the title screen when you start the game.
He's like I said, it's a succinct little sticker for the front of the game. Like you put Flux Wildly on there, he just looks like it's going to be a kid game. The fact that he cusses and is a fucking stinker is unrelated to how he looks.
I see.
Oh, and does this character have a name? Is that in the? I didn't find the manual. I should have looked a little harder for that. I didn't think to.
Yeah, he does. I don't remember it. Again, he's in like one part of the whole fucking game.
Yeah, like is he on the character page with a name and like any description?
No, the character page is just Flux and the other one. It's whatever, Drew. It's just them.
Drew.
It's the character's page and it doesn't even have images of them.
Clearly worthy of a whole chapter of a manual.
Clown.
Spike the clown.
Spike.
It's like Coonstruck. It's like the box, the main box. Like one of the box arts was just the clown, like our 3D render of the clown sticking a needle into like a dog's eye.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's really not the energy of the game, even though.
No,
yeah,
it's
like
not.
He makes it look more scarier and twisted than the game actually is for adults. But still, like, I see that as a kid and I would go like, I'm not supposed to play this. This looks evil.
Naughty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess because you always pitch above the, you pitch over the age you're actually pitching to.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You get what I'm saying.
So it looks forbidden.
Yes. There are plenty of games and weird, not games, but like kind of that type of media that just felt like, yes, was forbidden as a kid. And like, I don't know if you get that much anymore because everyone has access to everything.
I feel like
as a kid, you see things like this, the trailer for Conker's Bad Fur Day, and you're like, I'm going to get in trouble.
I feel like Ren and Stimpy was in a similar like vibe of like, sure, I shouldn't be watching this.
Or South Park when it first started.
Beavis and Butthead. Yeah.
Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah. So I guess that's Toonstruck. I guess that's all our thoughts on Toonstruck. Do you recommend this game?
Yes. Yes.
A little.
Yeah. I mean, if you liked old shitty cartoons, here's another one for you.
If you like,
problem is you have to play it a little bit.
If you like looking at Christopher Lloyd for any reason, that's a good enough reason to play this game, because Christopher Lloyd has
It's fine if you skip it, but it's such an interesting game in its own way.
Whatever long play pops up first when you type, you know, this into YouTube.
Sure.
Yeah, Moonstruck just, Long Blade. That's fine. That's going to go quick.
Too.
And it's still going to capture, because even in that one, you can see like the person playing it who is, clearly knows how to play the game and is like, it, like the clock puzzle, like they, it still takes them a few tries. You could like see them like pausing, like, what the fuck? Like, this is a person who sat down, had this game memorized, so they could make a thing where like, all right, I'm going to talk to everybody, hear all the dialogue. And even then, there's a couple of times when they fuck up. Because it's just like, what the hell am I supposed to be doing in this dog shit game?
So I guess it's time for plugs. Cohen, what you're working on and where can we find you?
You can find me at Skullmandible on Twitter, if that still exists by the time this goes up. Cohen is a ghost. Working on something with you two, a couple other interested parties. So I guess watch all our spaces for that when that drops. Won't say any more now, but game design might be a feature. That's what I got.
Secrets.
Sexy
secrets. And KC, what are you working on and where can we find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter or anywhere else, usually at KCGREENN. The one N was taken. But I'm always posting on, you know, Instagram, Twitter, wherever it is. I got a new comic out with King Features and on Comics Kingdom called God's Hands. It is just a gag comic in the likes of Farside or making a dumb Twitter post or something like that. Definitely more fun to create a funny image than to just post online. So that's what that is. And all my stuff is still online at the old and new. You can find at kcgreen.com.
And also on topatico.com, many, many, many things for sale from the KC Green Extended Universe.
Yeah.
And I got stuff on there, too. Also.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah,
they got Cohen products.
But listener, you know of the KC Green Extended Universe, but I won't get into it here. Buy the official merch. Don't buy knockoffs. But, and I am Jess O'Brien. I'm at Voidburger on Twitter, if it still exists. And all the other main places, you know, YouTube, Twitch, all those things. Co-host? I don't know. I'm not using it yet. I'll do it when I'm forced to.
Yeah, you're on Twitch. Oh, we were on Twitch too, at Game Worms, spelled with a U in the arm, in the worms.
Yeah. We've been doing cartoons.
Jess often comes by.
Yeah, we've been doing old 90s cartoons watch-alongs on Saturday mornings. Obviously not this Saturday morning or the next couple of weeks, but come by and follow, and you know, when you catch us, you catch us. Chance.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's a good time. I mean, like, this was a great podcast, guys. Like, this is the perfect, my Toon crew, the perfect crew to talk about Toonstruck with. Like, you know, knowledgeable, cool folks in here. This has been Retronauts. That's all, folks.
Folks.
Sorry, I don't have a thing prepared.
Well, do Edwin then.
Get the fuck off my show.
Get off my porch.
Get out of here, you. Come back with that cat, bro.
This has been Retronauts. That's all, folks.